Welcome back to the Iced Tea Podcast, the podcast where we spill the tea on figure skating. My name is Megan.
I am Netta. Hi, welcome back. How are you doing, Megan?
I'm doing great. Yeah, well, you always start these off-season episodes and you're like, it's X week of the off-season, blah, blah, blah. But like, it's kind of not the off-season anymore.
It is not. We're back. It's, you know, I spent my entire summer kind of complaining that it's off-season and now everything is happening so much and there's so many things going on, and it's been very,
it's too
very
much
exciting.
Food. It's so much. I feel overwhelmed.
So much of, like, at the same time, but it's fine. But before we do anything else, I wanted to say thank you for everyone who is coming back to listen to this now that we're entering a new season. Just wanted to say thank you at the top of the episode, because we always do this at the end, but I don't know if people, like, sign off. Thank you guys for listening and welcome back, and I hope you enjoy what we have prepared for you, which today is a lot of super exciting stuff.
And thank you if you're new as well, if you're just joining us after our, like, live tweeting of the JGP or what have you. Welcome to the new folks. This is a very special episode because we have a very, very special guest today. The one and only Jordan from On Ice Perspectives. And even if you don't know, you know.
If
you don't know that you've seen it, you've seen it. You've definitely seen his work on Instagram, on Twitter, on YouTube, on wherever you get your delicious, delicious skating video food. You have definitely seen On Ice Perspectives videos, and we are going to talk to him today about what those are and how he makes them and who he is and what are his hopes and dreams. So welcome, Jordan.
Hi everybody.
Hi, Jordan. Welcome
really
to
cool
the
intro.
Podcast.
Oh my god, thank you. I just made it.
Thank you so much for agreeing to chat with us. We're so excited to have you. How are you doing? How's your summer been?
Actually, this is a good point. I am unfamiliar still with both of your voices. I was wondering which one of you is Netta and which one of you is Megan.
Oh, fantastic.
Like,
I'm Netta. I'm the one with the Slavic accent, if you can catch that.
Okay. Never. It's so weird to be, like, on a podcast.
No, that's so legit.
That's perfectly fine.
I was gonna say, like, what if the listeners don't know? We should keep this in. I'm the one with the Rhode Island accent, and Netta's the one with the Bulgarian accent.
Yes.
You know what, though? Before you got on the call, I was demonstrating my Netta impression for Netta, though, so I could bust that out and confuse you.
Oh, God. So let's not. Yes.
Okay. Hi, Netta. Hi, Megan. It's really great to be on this show.
We're so happy to have you on this show. Very, very excited. Yes, before we get into any of the many questions we have for you, do you want to introduce yourself to our listeners? I'm sure, like Megan said, I'm sure most of them have seen your work, but they may not know, like, who the person behind all of that work is. So if you want to give us just an introduction of yourself.
Absolutely. Well, I was a Team USA ice dancer. As most people might assume from the videos that I make, I was a very competitive figure skater in ice dancing for a number of years. Well, okay, let's start from the beginning. I grew up in Los Angeles. I learned how to skate as a freestyler, as most of us do. And then when I was around 13 or 14, I switched to ice dancing because I just was so unwilling to really work on jumps. I was afraid of falling, as, again, most people are when they're skating. So I switched to ice dancing, and I absolutely loved it. And I got to compete at junior nationals, and then I moved to San Jose for a summer and with a partner, a new partner. And then at 16, I moved to Michigan to train with one of the training centers that was out there, where I trained until 2012, which was my last nationals. And I did pretty well. I skated with Anastasia Olsen for 5 years, and we finished our last season with seventh at nationals. So I'm still really happy with that result. I feel like it's where I felt like I wanted to accomplish in my skating career, but that was 7 years ago.
So what happened next? You got seventh in nationals, which is incredible.
And yeah, congratulations.
Even seven years later. And what happened next? What's the road from 7 years ago to, like, what you're doing now?
Well, I think even during my skating career, I was always interested in other things. And at the time, I felt really guilty about it. But having such a quick split from my partner right after nationals kind of forced me to finally reassess my life and what I was doing. And I didn't really fully assess it at the time, but I went into ballroom dancing like right afterwards, because essentially I really wanted to learn how to actually dance. Yeah. And I felt like figure skating was, it taught us a lot about how to perform, but not always necessarily the explanations behind the performance. But I loved movement, I loved dance, I loved music. So I switched to ballroom dancing and I competed with my now wife, Talia. I mean, this is like, this is turning into a really long bio.
No, I love that. Interesting. I love that. We're going to keep
We're here for it.
Okay. I started ballroom dancing with my girlfriend, who's now my wife, who was a figure skater as well. And we met in Detroit and we taught professionally ballroom dancing for 4 years together. And then I abruptly retired because of some injuries that I was starting to get from ballroom dancing. Ironically, not the same injuries I would have had as a skater, but they were more to do with like my hips and my back from all the heavy rhythm and Latin dancing.
Yeah.
So then I finally, I would say throughout my whole skating career, I was going in and out of college classes and the ballroom as well. But I finally like decided I would go to school for real full time, which lasted for about a year and a half. I was studying computer science and also teaching skating on the side. But even while I was competing skating, I loved making videos on the ice. As soon as I got like a little point and shoot camera, I was making videos of skating on the ice for school projects, for PowerPoint presentations, like any chance I could get, I was making a video. And it was around the time 2 years ago when I got invited to Doug Webster's Ice Dance International, the World of Ice Dance International TV show filming thing in Sun Valley. I got invited as a performer and I thought to myself, wow, this is going to be one of the prettiest rinks I get to skate on. It's an outdoor rink.
Like, yeah.
It's the rink, you know, the video of Nathan Chen doing the backflip?
Yep.
Yeah.
That rink.
Oh, it's just okay.
Open,
oh, that's so beautiful.
Open air.
Yeah, that's a really.
It has a shade you can put over the ice, actually.
Yeah, that was
but
gorgeous.
They usually leave it open. Yeah, so I get invited to skate for Doug Webster's company. And at the time, I was like really obsessed with videography channels on YouTube. I mean, some of your listeners may know of Casey Neistat and Peter McKinnon and all of those guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've always wanted to make videos like that, but I didn't want to do necessarily what they did, which was either like travel or tutorials or basically like they say it all the time, content is king. And if you look at any Instagram account that you really like, it's usually because of the things they're doing. They're really interesting. And I just felt like I didn't have anything necessarily interesting to show as someone who was just kind of going to school and coaching skating. I would say what it really came down to is I was doing things I didn't really want to do. And going to Sun Valley and skating on an outdoor rink, which is something I don't know if I had done that before then, but I grabbed a gimbal for my phone. It was like $130 and I took it with me. And I mean, I remember I was so close to returning it. Like I bought it. I was like $130. This is so expensive. I don't need this. But thankfully I didn't return it. And I went to Sun Valley and I started recording everywhere with it, just pointing my phone at the drive, the journey, the mountains, the sky. And I started taking it onto the ice and filming the choreography, both as a way to help me remember it, but also just because we had amazing skaters like Doug Webster's classes. Benoit was there. He was choreographing.
Oh, gorgeous.
Benoit.
Yeah, that was the first time I met him. And yeah, I got on the ice and started recording choreography and looked at it later and I just couldn't stop showing it to everyone. Like, check this out. Oh my God, it's in slow motion. And I would hold it in my hand while I did exercises and just went crazy with it. But I remember looking at the footage and being like, okay, I haven't actually edited a video in a million years. I know all these tricks now from watching tutorials, but I'm going to have to sit on this. Like, I'm going to have to really learn how to use Final Cut Pro and make this look as good as I can because it deserves it. And in the meantime, the TV show that we were producing, the director like asked for a bunch of the footage. So it ended up making it like just this raw iPhone footage. They threw it into the documentary, which I thought was pretty cool.
That was awesome.
September, October, November. But the iPhone 10 came out and right away I just started using like iMovie on my phone and the Apple Clips app to start to learn how to like edit and piece together storylines of cool things. And when I came back to New York, I bought a GoPro and a little 360 camera and started messing around with those. And I made like this super cool video of Ice Theater of New York's Edge class. I mean, basically, to put it simply, I took every tool I could and started really heavily investing in learning how to edit and make skating footage look cool. And it was kind of like that for the next 5 months. I didn't really publish anything or post anything. I just kept making these short little videos. I guess you could say that my whole philosophy about video is that you give me anything, like even if it's an iPhone or a GoPro or a 360 camera, and I will try to like push it to its limit. And I would say my philosophy has always been like trying to use the gear the way that it has never been used before.
Oh, I love that.
Cool.
So like, I know all the ways that they're used on YouTube because I watch so many videos.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I come up with an idea that no one else has done, I'm like, well, you can't just think about it. You have to do it because pretty soon someone's going to do it. The 2018 Olympics rolls around. I'm still coaching every morning, and every day I'm like driving to the rink trying to think of what I should call this, because, well, let's just say the birth of the whole Instagram channel. It was something I always was aware of with social media, especially Instagram, is that it has to be niche. Like, you can make a niche out of anything. I mean, obviously people make niches out of their dogs or coffee. Like, if you wanted to make a niche of like radios, you could do that.
Oh,
and
for
someone
sure
would follow it.
Like, yeah.
I think in this day and age of like everything being available at all times, when you can like just get lost for a minute in a page that's all about like purple orchids, I don't know, or vintage vacuum cleaners.
You know, you say that. You say that as like a joking example, and I'm like, can I follow that? That sounds fascinating.
I know. Where do I learn about these, like?
I know, right?
Antique hoovers. Like, what do we?
Well, that's the thing, that there are so many ideas out there, right? Like, if you wanted to start an Instagram about vintage Hoovers, like, if you're thinking to yourself, have I seen that or have I not? Well, chances are there's, like, at least 100,000 people who also haven't seen a vintage vacuum cleaner Instagram channel. So you should go and make one, and you could be possibly the number one vintage vacuum cleaner Instagram channel. And you could say you're number one at it, you know?
I'm looking it up.
We like to think we are the number one comedy ice skating podcast, because we're like the only one.
Hey, listen, you're the only one.
It could be true.
Yeah.
But there's also the thing that there are so many people in the world right now, and they're all being exposed to social media. So even if you're the number three, but you have 50,000 people, I guarantee you all 50,000 people like think that you're the number one.
Oh, that's a great way to look at it. I love that.
It's like how, it's like, what is it? It's like, to the world, you're just one person, but to one person, you might be the world.
To one person,
you
are.
But to 50,000 followers, you might be the world.
There are over 500 posts in the hashtag vintage vacuum hashtag on Instagram.
As you can see, it's my mentality when I think of social media. And I think it's a good mentality when it comes to social media, because, well, to put it this way, I saw a lot of figure skating videos on Instagram. Like, I, you know, hashtag figure skating, hashtag ice skating. Yeah. Stumble across in your feed, and I would be like, wow, okay, wow, this girl, she just posts a video of her axle every day. Every day. It's just another video of her axle, or a picture of her scratch spin. And it's filmed with an iPhone, like on the side of the rink, leaning against the board, or held up by her tissue box. And it has 10,000 views.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow. Like, obviously this girl is putting a bunch of work into it. You know, she's training and she's practicing, but she's finding the time to like make it interesting. And I don't know, people are interested in it. So I realized that if I could just make skating videos look a little bit better than an iPhone video, just a little bit better. Like, iPhones produce amazing content straight out of the box. You just point something at it and it's perfectly exposed and it's got great dynamic range and the colors pop. But if I could like film it with something just a slight bit better, like a GoPro, you know, because GoPros have a wider angle lens and you can put them in more interesting places and you can take more risks with them than an iPhone that you don't want to drop because it costs $100,000.
Yep. I have definitely tried to film myself skating with an iPhone in my hand, and it's a very terrifying experience because you're not only thinking about your wrists and your ankles and everything else you can break, you're only also thinking about this tiny machine with like everything you own on it.
Yeah.
Which is scarier sometimes than a wrist or...
I was going to say, yeah, my wrists are not worth that much money. what do my wrists do? Nothing.
So how was the name? How was the brand Born?
Well, I went through a lot of names. Every time I would drive in the morning, I would be thinking, okay, what do I have? Like point of view, some sort of point of view, POV, but POV sounds silly. Skater POV, skating POV. And I just kept getting stuck on this point of view. And I think it was my mother-in-law who was visiting New York who said, well, you should try perspective. That's a nice word. I mean, I like to think that I came up with the name, but I've been reminded before that she was the one who brought up the word perspective. So I'm just going to give her the credit because it doesn't matter. I own Honest Perspectives now, and it's the greatest name I've ever thought of in my life.
It is.
To call it that.
It's very recognizable. It's like it's very much like a brand now that like, I think everyone who's on the internet and like consumes skating content in one way or another has seen that name on something, even if they're not like aware consciously of that. Your stuff is like basically
everywhere.
It's more
fun when they're not aware. I like it when people who have been following me for a very long time call it One Ice Perspectives.
But just one.
But one.
Yeah.
Two would be too many.
Or someone said, it's like, oh, Nice Perspectives. Yeah.
Oh, I like that. That's nice very sweet. That's very sweet.
That's cute.
But yeah, it was that name. And I remember it was February 1st that I like registered the Instagram and made a logo on Canva. Yes. And February 2nd that I made my first video. And it was just like, it was just me getting on the ice with the, oh, I think at that point I finally bought a Canon DSLR and a larger gimbal and made my first video with it. And I'm like, yes, I've reached that point. To me, it's like, I enjoy the challenge. I enjoy the fact that I'm outside of ISU. Yeah. I'm outside of US figure skating. I'm the skaters. Because when have people ever really felt that the skaters were properly represented?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not that they aren't, like, obviously these organizations do everything for them, but I'm kind of like channeling that extra little push, just balancing it out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want skaters, in the end, I want skaters to keep skating.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Like, I want skaters who are competitive or recreational, I want them to find that drive to keep doing it, because the longer you do it, the better you get and the more enjoyment you get out of it.
Yeah.
And if you stop, it kind of stops. Like, you know how many people are like, I used to skate, but I don't watch it anymore.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that's a shame. You're the best person to watch skating. You used to do it. You kind of understand it.
Yeah.
You should be watching it.
You know, that's like the thing I run into, like, even at my rank, like some of the coaches who are like, kind of people my age, like they're mid to late 20s, so many of them are like, oh yeah, I'm here every day, but I have no idea, like I don't watch competitions anymore and I have no idea what's happening and blah blah blah. And it always kind of makes me a little bit sad, because those are the people who would have like the best conversations about it, or like have the coolest perspective. I think this is the first time we've said perspective on this here podcast, but yeah,
take a shot,
everyone. If you're of age and it's not 5 a.m. or something, take a shot.
Every time we say perspective. No, that's so real, Netta. Like, I run into that too, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. And it's funny because anyone older, especially like the instructors, but even just like the older students, like there's like a disconnect, and they are like, oh, you like really watch it and keep up with it and you know who everybody is, and they like have no idea. And I'm like, but you're the one who really knows how to do this. Like, I can't even swizzle right. but you don't know who Nathan Chen is? Like, what's going on?
If it wasn't for me going out and filming these competitive skaters and wanting to make a video of them before they skate or during or right afterwards, I wouldn't be watching it either. And to me, I find it's really hard for me. I don't I'm sure a lot of people share this, but I find it hard to watch skate in certain ways. Like, obviously, the Olympics is easier to watch. The Junior Grand Prix ISU broadcasts are so nice. But to me, skaters are people who fell into this crazy mix of sport and art. And I don't feel like skating showcases enough of the work that they're putting in.
Yeah.
It's like skating gets lost in this whole like competitive points based system.
Yeah.
That you forget that it's not just about what the judges think, it's about what the audience thinks.
You know, it's funny, like I think we come up against that a lot in our podcast without necessarily like thinking about it, because we love to follow all the skaters on Instagram and be like, who are they as people, you know? And I think that people want that, like fans of the sport want to know who the skaters are and like support them and not just be like, how many points did you get? But my perception was always that the nature of the sport was like, whether it was coming from the ISU or like the respective federations or just the overall like aura of skating was like, no, you can't be too human. Everybody has to be like a perfect package. Like, is there any truth to that? Or is that just the perception we have of skating as this very like closed gated elite sport?
Well, like look at the demographics of skaters.
Yeah.
Just from the color of their skin. Like there's definitely a particular type of curation going on. I know
for sure
some skaters who could do a triple axel, but don't fit in that in the common body type.
And for like whatever it's worth, and that's a conversation we've kind of touched upon on the podcast before, but the very few figure skaters of color who do compete and we do get to see on an international stage, for one reason or another, they're especially their PCS gets reflective of a certain expectation that some judges may or may not have.
And people love to get on a soapbox and cry out about it. And I think they reach an audience, but to me, it's like, well, I guess it's this. I think the Olympics in figure skating, like just that, the sheer level of competition, like we put the Olympics on a pedestal.
Yeah. Right.
And we grade every skater by their potential to reach the Olympics.
Yeah.
But I think it's about reaching people.
Yeah.
And what I see On Ice Perspectives is that it's using, like I definitely use popular competitive figure skaters as a way of attracting new followers. Like obviously when I made that the first video of Tessa and Scott, like I'm pretty sure I gained 1,000 followers in a day.
That would make
I've
sense.
I've tried to make it a point to showcase unfortunately lately I've been filming mostly competitive skaters, but even in the beginning, like the first skater that I was making videos of, his name was Corley.
Yeah.
And he's a former ballet dancer, started figure skating, and within 18 months, he was like working on his triple axel. It was
incredible.
Stupid.
Wow. Just
absolutely ridiculous.
That's wild.
I loved filming him just like rolling around on the ice, doing splits in the shortest shorts you've ever seen. And I was like, this is amazing. Not only is it something that no one has ever seen before, but it's good. And it is completely out of the realm of competitive figure skating. And that's also good because I think people want this too.
Yeah.
And as much as people want their like clean lines, doing the perfect exquisite quads at the Olympics for the entire world, I think equally we need to show everything out there. And if you do it enough, eventually even the top will kind of start to realize that there's like you have to show them show them what they're missing.
For sure.
And so I guess you could say that it's been a while since I thought about that, but On Ice Perspectives to me was like everything that you won't see in competition.
Oh, I love that.
Ergo, a person pitch. Skating on the ice next to the skater. You'll never see that in competition. I have no interest in doing that in competition. I want to make that perfectly clear. But
for sure.
But showcases, exhibitions, Olympic Gala Exhibition, NBC, if you're listening.
Hi, like, NBC, if you're listening. We're so happy you're here.
NBC, if you want to give me free sports gold just for a year, you would make my life so much better, NBC. No, but I think you bring up a really great point, too, which is that it's like the people that you see on television, if you watch whatever competition they're broadcasting, it's like we know those people and then we know us who can't, well, not you, but like me, who can't do anything. And you don't ever see anybody in between, but there's so many people who are doing so many remarkable things that you just like don't hear about, and because they're not competing at like a certain level or maybe at all, but they're still really amazing. And it's such a weird like blind spot of the sport where like you don't get to see those people unless they skate at your rink.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest, like to someone who's never seen or stepped on ice before, someone who can glide on one foot is amazing.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there is a lot of, I think there is a lot of that. Like, for example, like when I go to my rink, there is, I've had people stop me, like, you know, like younger kids and be like, are you a figure skater? And I have like three of my singles. And I'm like, no.
You are though. No, yes, you are.
I just have a basic spiral. Yeah, but the thing is like the things that we measure as like success or ability are so vastly different. And I think Jordan, you said mm-hmm. something very cool and like a very great observation that like we measure skaters' ability by their potential to go to the Olympics. And I think like as an adult figure skater, like something I see a lot is, you know, people who are like, they'll post on the internet or something and be like, am I too old to like start? And like, am I going to get anything out of it? Every single response starts with, well, you're not going to get to go to the Olympics, but it's an insane metric to put upon people who like will have a vastly different like lifestyle if they do pick up like skating or they start taking care of their body because they decide to like do this as a hobby or a way to like get out of the house or like whatever the case may be. And like so many different stories, like the guy you mentioned, Jordan, so many people who, you know, come from different walks of life and have a different way of progressing, all of that. It's bizarre to me that we boil it down to, are we going to see you on TV in 4 years or not?
To me. Even yeah. among elite skaters, my God, remember when Maxime Kovtun retired earlier this summer and he was like, the boy who never got to go to the Olympics. And I'm like, but you did so well, champ. You had a beautiful career.
Yeah, it's crazy to me that, I mean, obviously Olympics, huge deal and very, very great for people who do get to do that. But it's insane that it's like the only, like, if you're showing, yeah. if you're showing like figure skating, like if I wanted to show a video, any like I open up YouTube and I want to show something to someone who's never seen a figure skating video, and I type in just like figure skating, the first 20 results would probably be the Olympics from last year, and that's like the like mm-hmm. little package we show people.
Well, I'll don't know if how aware you are of this, but this was my experience as a competitive skater who didn't go to the Olympics, or even like, okay, so you're a competitive figure skater, you could say a high-end competitive figure skater because you're training for nationals at the
yeah.
juvenile, novice, intermediate, junior level,
mm-hmm.
and you are almost never doing a show.
Yeah.
Right? And yeah. I think when you think of like some of the greatest things you've seen on ice,
yeah,
it's generally from a show.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, a show that you saw live, because generally shows are meant to be seen live, competitions yeah. are meant to be seen on broadcast. Tickets for shows are generally a bit more affordable yeah. than tickets to competitions. And so a lot more people have seen it. But as an ice dancer, I mean, we did one show a year at the Detroit Skating Club.
Yeah.
And usually that was us just doing our competitive routine. And, you know, our coaches are like, okay, a great opportunity for you to do your competitive routine in front of an audience. And they're like, yeah. okay, fine. And maybe they'll have like a group number, a guy's number where we actually got to like have fun. But it was, I mean, in my experience, it was just us having fun on the ice.
Yeah.
I mean, I personally was in musical theater before I was
for sure.
a competitive skater, like yeah. really, really competitive. And I loved performing. And I did not get enough of that when I was competing.
Yeah.
And most skaters don't. I think the skaters that you guys see and idolize that have been winning worlds in the Olympics, I mean, they do a lot of shows because that's around the point where they start getting paid to do shows yeah. at the end of a competition. Like, you don't get your prize money unless you do the show. And as such, like, the vast majority of skaters below that level don't get to work on their showmanship.
We come back to this so much on this podcast, like Well, and I think it's because we're coming from, like, Netta and I met at graduate school for theater. So we're, like, so deeply immersed in, like, performance, and we've studied it and studied it and studied it from, like, theoretical and practical perspectives and every possible angle.
Hey, take a shot, perspectives.
Perspectives, right?
Oh, yeah.
There you go. And of course, you know, we have just started, like, actually learning how to ice skate in the past, like, year. So technically we're, like, not your people, but we do love to talk about, you know, the performance aspect of things. And we're always like, we want to go and, like, just, like, give these kids acting lessons. Like, but that's just, like, our little, like, wouldn't it be fun to do an acting workshop?
I love this conversation on, like, accessibility and, like, the way people watch and what people do get to see. I guess my question is, what would you like the normal people who happen to stumble upon figure skating as a thing to be able to see? Like, the ideal, like, I'm going on YouTube, I type in figure skating, I want to see something. What would that be?
I want, the thing is, if I say this, someone might go ahead and do it. But I need to have the confidence knowing that I would still make the best one.
Oh, for sure.
And...
you have a head start on, like, everyone else.
That's the spirit, yeah.
Like, I, the thing is, I haven't even started, like, doing drafts of it. Normally, if I really think about a video concept, I'm going to do it, like, at least once or twice.
Yeah.
And never publish it.
Yeah.
And I haven't even gotten to that point yet. But I honestly want to make, like, the best PSA video on how to lace up your skates for beginners.
Yeah,
like, how to pick the right rental skates and how to lace them up properly and why you should... But, like, the point is, it has to be interesting enough.
Yeah.
And you have to give enough interesting facts, or at least make it look pretty enough, or do all three, that people literally are like, this video about lacing up your skates is hilarious.
I love that,
you know,
so
much. I should get Adam Rippon to do it.
Oh, he would be so fun.
There you go.
He would
you
be
should.
So fun.
Make him, he should, yeah, we're going to make him wear rental skates.
That would be so
okay,
fun.
Adam, if
I would
you
watch
this
him
and
do
you
anything.
Do it without me, I'll kill you.
We were actually just talking about his series, the Break the Ice series, like right before he came onto the call, because we were talking about how fun it is to watch people who can't really skate skate with someone who can really, really skate. And how that's like
mm-hmm.
how that's like content we didn't get to see before he did that series. And like,
yeah, that was genius.
I think it goes back to like what I've been obsessed with talking to you about is like the seeing different sides of skating, because like even that it's like, oh, Adam Rippon, he's an Olympian, like blah 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 blah, we've seen him do all of those things, but then you see him like skating around with a
yeah.
random person chatting, and that's like, oh, that's also a thing this person does. It's a brand new okay, get your shots ready, it's a brand new perspective into like a thing we've seen. But anyway, yes,
yeah.
you should make a video
I
in
think,
which he laces up some rentals.
I think skating became almost too elite.
Oh,
and,
for sure.
I mean, obviously, it you have different opinions about that depending on where you are in the skating
yeah.
spectrum. But as someone who got relatively high up but started from, you know, my parents didn't skate. I just kind of fell into it.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just trying to, like what Adam's doing with his videos, I'm trying to bridge the gap and kind of democratize skating again, like it was in like the heyday of
yeah
skating shows. I remember there's a really good documentary on Netflix called the golden what is it called the golden ice age.
Oh,
I think.
That's great.
Yes, yeah,
yeah.
What's yeah mm-hmm.
And it just talks about like the skating in the 20s and 30s and how
yeah.
these little portable rink tanks brought skating to places where it never could have been
yeah.
before, and all of a sudden everyone was watching it and enjoying it and knowing about it and trying it. And I feel like using social media as that medium, where like in the 20s and 30s it was seeing it in person, and then
yeah.
in the 50s and 60s it was seeing it on TV, 70s, 80s, and now it's being shown less and less on TV. Well,
yeah.
now is the kind of age of social media where if I want people to like be aware of skating and not just what they're fed by one single point,
yeah,
which is the Olympics.
Yeah. I think that's great. I think that's so exciting.
Yeah, I think, like, the there, sometimes within the skating fandom, there's like this attitude of like, oh, four-year fans who only watch the Olympics, filthy casuals. And it's like, okay, well, you could be mean to them, or you could like invite them in and be like, look how much fun we're having all the time watching skating every day. I mean, I think that's what we're trying to do, right? Is like, show them how fun it can be to like watch it every year.
I think it's a weird elitism that people have with like, oh, you've only seen the Olympics. Well, I know what this skater like wore to practice yesterday because I follow them on Instagram. Like, there's like this weird ownership that people take of like the amount of engagement they have. But also, for like whatever it's worth, I went like in, I think it was May or something. I went to like the very, very, very youngest tiny babies who are like 4 years old at Bulgarian nationals to watch them skate, and I had the most fun. It just reminded me that there are so many levels of what people can be seeing and like enjoying. There is the Olympics, and it is fantastic to watch and always exciting and blah 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 blah, but there's also so many other ways in which people can see this. And I think, Jordan, what you said earlier, that, you know, for people who can't skate at all, if you can glide on one foot, it's like you're already like incredible. I think
I learned that I'm incredible. I just recently learned how to be incredible.
And oh my God, you're fantastic.
You I never glide. Have to learn anything else for the rest of my life.
Yeah, you can glide. That's fantastic.
What did you learn?
Oh, I learned how to glide on one foot. So I'm amazing now. Oh. That was like my last skill that I learned before I broke my toe a month ago. So
oh my God.
Yeah.
Isn't that though, like, that is gliding on one foot and finding like that moment where you just start skiing on the ice with like just behind the ball of the foot.
Yes.
And you're like, oh my God, I figured out how not to get my toe pick stuck and go flat on my face. And when you start gliding on one foot and your other foot's lifted up and you can hold it there until you like run out of speed, that's the best feeling. You know, a lot of times when I'm filming, there are times when I like need the smoothest shot possible. So I'll glide on one foot.
Yeah.
Because it's the only way to really guarantee you get a smooth shot.
Yeah.
And it's not as safe as gliding on 2 feet.
Oh, for sure.
But no risk, no reward.
Yeah,
I guess a lot of the people who skate at my rink are also like in their 70s and 80s, and they're so much better than me.
Oh my God.
They're awesome. They're so great. Like, I don't know what it is. It's like always me and like these like older ladies, and they're so nice. Like they'll come up to me and be like, how are you, sweetie? Do you love skating? Do you still love skating? Isn't it fun? I'm like, yes, it's great.
You know the whole cryotherapy fad that's sweeping around? It's like, oh, go inside this room and it's really cold and it's good for your skin and circulation. I'm like, just go into a freaking ice rink.
Just go skate. Like,
it's the same thing.
Yeah.
There's just, I love it. I think that's where I feel the most at home.
Yeah.
And if there's anything that I want people to get out of these videos, it's like, okay, get your fix on your phone, but then put your phone down and go walk into an ice rink. And okay, I was gonna say, and see if that makes your mood feel any better.
Oh, well, God, depends I love on the that. Person,
but it depends on the person, right? I remember going into an ice rink at a few points in my life, and I'm like, oh, ice rink. But like in the middle of summer, when you can just walk into this,
oh my God,
hilariously expensive and not climate change friendly refrigerated warehouse.
Yep.
Oh God, that was so nice.
Jordan, let's talk about this, like, you've created this niche for yourself, which, like, no one else is doing quite like what you're doing.
I think my niche is simply this. It's, I'm dedicating all of my time to making figure skating content. It's like, I have fantasies of, like, going to a whole event and not bringing my skates or a gimbal, just literally an iPhone with, like, a wireless microphone that you can clip to someone.
Yeah.
And seeing what I can make with that. And even if it's just like filming hilarious interviews with skaters and like making videos of them tying their skates, putting their makeup on, like nothing to do with on the ice. I want to do the things that no one has ever thought of doing before because there just was no money in it.
You could release just that for like 3 months and I would be riveted. I would be watching all of it.
Yeah. The problem is that there just aren't enough of you around.
People don't know that that's an option, I think.
It also goes against like everything, like the mentality of skating, which is we don't show the process. We don't show the training. And I fully agree. Like, I would not want to watch a live stream of skaters backstage.
Oh, yeah, that would be too much.
It's just, it's the worst idea. But I want to watch a curated, like, it's the same reason why I wouldn't want to watch a live stream of a skater practicing.
Do you think there is a way to film like a choreography like process and make it interesting?
Yeah, I've done it 3 times now in the past month. Rock the Ring tour is coming up.
Yeah.
I was in Toronto 3 weeks ago. Jeremy Abbott and Kurt Browning got together and choreographed a number for the Rock the Ring show.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
I was so lucky. I was in the right place at the right time, said the right things, and I got to go on the ice with them. So I wirelessly mic'd them both, so I did not have to be anywhere close to them on the ice. And I could kind of film as a fly on the wall, but then also get right up in their face when necessary, or they could split up and you still have like the sound of them talking to themselves while they're skating.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And I just started going through like the roughly 2 hours of footage, and anything that like looked or sound fun to me, I just threw into a timeline, and it's currently around 10 minutes long. And if I kept going, it would probably end up being 20 minutes long.
Oh my God.
But it's just like this nonstop, like full of energy, hilariousness. And I want to do this all the time. I mean, it's about trust.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? Because obviously people say profane things.
Oh, for sure.
In their day-to-day life. And
not
just
us,
like this,
but I'm sure.
Yeah. Just, it's watching 2 really experienced, talented, yet humble and modest people talking about what would make an audience laugh or cry or feel an emotion, and you get to be in that situation.
I think this is one of those things that I keep like mentioning, is like a thing that no one knows is an option. Like,
yeah,
there isn't a person out there on the internet who wants to consume this content who knows that this content is an option. And I think that's like super exciting.
I think because the thing I'm thinking about is like how popular the Shib Sibs vlogs are, but how every time they have to actually start skating, they have to turn off the camera. And so you get these little like 30-second bits of them like interacting with their friends, but then they have to turn off the camera and it like be skaters. So you don't, it's like choppy, but it's like, I understand why. But if there was someone like Jordan whose only job it was to capture the best parts, like how much better could it even be?
It's true. I mean, the Shibutanis were like, they were my generation.
Mm-hmm.
And they have done such an amazing job, like, for everything they've done. But what they're missing is they need that third person, which is why they're partnering with, like, so many more content creators now.
Yeah.
But in the next, you know, 2 or 3 Olympics sessions, there are going to be skaters that kind of grew up with me filming them.
Oh, my God. Yeah. What is that like?
I mean, it's amazing. It's like these kids grew up seeing me compete when they were, like, juvenile skaters. And you know, I feel like I want to help them do better than what my generation was able to accomplish.
What, aside from getting to like watch the next generation grow up, like what else are you proud of from what you've done?
That's a good question. What else? I mean, so many things. I'm just trying to like think of what one thing.
Oh, you can give us all of them. You do not need to be humble about this.
I'm proud that I have found my voice, because I didn't think I had one for a very long time, or at least I didn't think I had an appropriate one. I feel really blessed. No, okay, I don't really feel blessed, but
Hashtag so blessed.
Yeah.
Hashtag booked and blessed. Jordan is booked and blessed. And
what am I proud of? I'm proud of the figure skating community. I'm proud of the figure skating community for knowing that we needed a change.
Oh, that's great.
Like, even like these amazing coaches, super high level. I mean, I got to skate on Raphael's ice. Like,
can we talk about that? Can we talk about that? What was that like?
I can't really share the whole thing.
Oh, for sure.
But I know Mikhail. Oh God, I'm so bad at pronouncing his name. But Danielle. And
Danielle's
Mikhail,
husband. We'll just call him Danielle.
I mean, we just call him Michael. Mm-hmm. Danny and Michael are really good friends of mine from way back when I was training at Detroit Skating Club.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been talking with Raph for months about filming there. Mm-hmm. And basically his rule was, you can't film there unless I'm there.
Okay.
So this was the first time I was there and he was there. Mm-hmm. And I got to skate on the ice. Unfortunately, didn't get to record Nathan because he was busy at Champs Camp. So big mistake. I need to go back. But something that I like feel really protective about is that like I don't want to encourage this whole generation of guys or girls running around on the ice on gibbles, getting in people's way, interfering with lessons. It's not why I do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I film on the ice because it's new and it's hip and it's different.
Yeah.
But it won't always be that way. And it's extremely dangerous. And mm-hmm. it's extremely risky. And, like, I've gotten seriously hurt doing it. No, I've never gotten anyone hurt. And that's, like, my number one goal. It was actually be getting myself hurt because I didn't want anyone else to get hurt. Yeah. But there's a huge amount of responsibility that I put on myself when I'm on the ice. And sometimes I'm just like, you know what? I don't want to film on the ice right now. Mm-hmm. Like, either I'm not in my peak performance, or the skaters doesn't want the camera, like they're not at their peak performance.
Yeah.
Or there's just something in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the freedom right now to be like, yeah, I'm not going to film.
Yeah.
But someone else who is trying to come up might not take that patience. And that scares me. Yeah. And I can't be responsible for that. But at the same time, I wanted to do my best to kind of show that there's more to filming skating than just being on the ice with the skaters. Also, I have years of ballroom experience, which allow me to kind of see behind myself. So, like, I can get on the ice with an entire synchro team and at least have the confidence to know that I can get out of the way.
Yeah.
I have to imagine that you also must have a certain high level of skill at just, like, partnering, whether on ice or off, which I think does probably involve a lot of, like, watching out for someone else and yourself at the same time, right?
Yeah, yeah, like, when I'm filming a synchro skate or even a dance team, I kind of match their steps,
mm-hmm.
but in the opposite direction.
Wow. That's so and much like allows me... quick thinking on your feet.
Well, it's feeling. It's yeah. It's what you do as a partner.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like if you're used to that, then that would be like another sort of skill that you happen to have that makes you right for this.
Yeah. Like I have no issues with doing any skating move. Like I don't think about it. I just skate. Like, how to skate is not in my head at all when I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I mean, I don't even look... I don't look at my camera monitor when I'm filming, which was a huge skill that took... I'm still kind of mastering it. But if I take my eyes off the skater for even a second, the danger levels go really, really up.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you just, like, blink, the skaters now move somewhere where you might not be able to mm-hmm. get out of the way.
Yeah. I have a question. You had said... obviously that your goal is not to be like, you know, the official cameraman of the ISU or NBC events or anything like that. But I would be curious to hear you talk a little bit about if you have any opinions on the like camera work as it stands now for the official broadcast of events that, you know, your average person is going to see if they turn on the Olympics or Worlds or something.
Sure. Yeah. I think I learned so much about being a cameraman working for Dancing on Ice, which is this big show in the UK, produced by and stars Jane Torval and Christopher Dean.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Of course. Icons, and legend
they
stars.
Have, like, last season, we had, like, 7.5 million people watch the premiere, and it kind of hovered around 5 to 6 million for the rest of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And I got to be a live cameraman on the show, but I was one of 14 cameras in the studio.
Oh, wow.
And, I mean, this was, like, you can't really film skating more advanced than the show was, especially last season, having a camera on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
A director saw all of the routines beforehand, and seeing the way the director could coordinate 14 cameras in the studio, including two on massive technocranes that could like sweep over half of the ice. It like just being on the show and watching the way that she would shoot it gave me such a vocabulary for how to establish space and direction. Mm-hmm. And I think at the Olympics, they do an amazing job, you know, with the exception of that camera that goes over the skaters.
I hate that. So
the sky cam. Oftentimes they do it at like the most dramatic climactic moment of the routine or the music. And it has the opposite effect they think it's having. It like draws you out.
Well, I think my uncle, who's not a skater, but started watching skating more when I skated. And now even more now that I have like a channel, he said, it turns the skaters into like this inanimate top, this spinning top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it takes the humanity out of it. But, you know, it's we make our routines for the judges. You know, the best vantage point is going to be either from the judges or, I don't know, my opinion, slightly below like knee height when they're doing things that are up. Okay, anyways, to summarize it, and this is the same as true in the dance world as well. Like you don't want to keep the skater in the center of the frame.
Yeah.
Because if you do that, if you're too good at following them, you're going to rob them of all of their speed.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like, like there's this thing in movie making where like if you keep the subject in the center of the frame for too long, the audience will start to like fall asleep. Mm-hmm. You have to give them a reason to like scan left, scan right. So yeah, I mean that's just, I find that you have to be a skater, mm-hmm, to be a good cameraman for skating.
Yeah,
you can have a lot of years of experience too. I mean, there are excellent cameramen out there, but if I was putting on a skating show that was going to be filmed, like I would hire skaters to be my spotlights, to be my cameramen,
yeah,
to do everything.
Maybe one day there will be like the On Ice Perspectives On Ice show.
Oh yeah, hell yeah.
That would be like so like, fun to watch.
Like way in the future, I want to be producing like actual skating videos, like movies.
Do you want to talk about what you're doing in the next couple of days? Let's find a better way to introduce this because I was being
so
very
vague. It looks like you're going to this show. I haven't heard of it, but it's called the Autumn Classique. Am I pronouncing that right? What is that, like a small show in, let me see here, Canada?
Canada.
It's in Canada.
The country of Canada.
I don't think any of our listeners are familiar with this particular event or anybody who's going. If you could just, give us a...
but seriously, like, when did I have this idea? I was in Montreal last week, and I was asking everybody, okay, what's your first event of the season? Oh, it's Salt Lake City. Oh, it's Autumn Classic. I'm like, cool. Because I'm just kind of like keeping track of the dates. And like three people were like, Autumn Classic. Oh, that's next week. And I started thinking like, well, okay, I know Lila and Lewis pretty well. They're going. Mm-hmm. Olivia and Adrian, I love them. They're going. And I was like, you know what? What if I just like followed them around outside of the competition? That's what I tried to do at Champs Camp too. Was just like meet up with the skaters outside of the rink on their lunch breaks, mm-hmm, film an interview with them and be like, ha ha ha, US figure skating, try to stop me. this is outside of your jurisdiction. Well, they actually asked me to stop. I know how they feel about what I do.
Yeah.
Some people like love it, but the people at the top, they actually don't feel anything, which also disappoints me. So it's like, okay, well, I know these skaters personally. I've filmed with them. Like literally every coach there at Champs Camp, I've like been on the ice with their teams. And so yeah, if I wanted to like reveal people's music when it shouldn't be revealed, I could have done it by now. Yeah. So like kind of trust me not to show anyone's bad side. But to be honest, I do agree with US Figure Skating's decision on this. I think if I had to assume what they thought when I showed up, it was that I was going to be like filming their practice and try to like publicize it and share it. And
yeah,
I just wanted like pictures of the skaters hanging out in the lobby, stretching, warming up. So I had hoped that I'd be able to work with them on that. Mm-hmm. But it's not there yet. Hopefully next year.
Yeah.
So I just thought to myself, well, okay, let's try this again. So I reached out to Skate Canada through like their official press form, sent an email, got a reply back like, no, sorry, you don't qualify as press. But if you are willing to produce some content for Skate Canada, we'll give you accreditation.
Oh, nice.
Like because they've seen my work. And actually, I just filmed at their high performance seminar the week before. And I don't know if they were aware of that or not, but I was on the ice with their like entire senior team, filming them like with a spotlight, getting them to do throw double twists and double throws. Mm-hmm. You know, stuff that has never been put on film in this manner before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I must have like made an impression on somebody. Mm-hmm. So now I'm officially filming for them.
That is so exciting.
Congratulations. It's like a trial.
Thank you. It's a trial, so there's still a lot of my own expenses that I have to cover, but thankfully the GoFundMe page is helping with me with that. And it like just reached full funding in like 3 days, which is asked for $500. I was like, how much is a flight? $350. How much is hotel, rent, renting a car? Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Obviously, like I'm not even gonna break even on the amount of time it's gonna take me.
Oh, for sure.
I don't care. Like, this is my opportunity to film at an ISU event. So here's my plan. I'm going to follow some skaters around, film them. Like, I really want to film skaters, like, getting to the hotel, checking in, like, putting on their competition makeup. Like, when do you do it? Do you do it at the venue? Do you do it in your hotel room? Mm-hmm. Where do you warm up? Do you take a nap? Like, all the humanizing parts.
Oh, I love that.
Competing.
Yeah.
Like, their practice session, the coach saying a few things to them. Some close-ups of them breathing and practicing and struggling just a little bit. And God forbid, like, some actual drama happens. They, like, actually lose a bag. then I'll be like, well, I'm glad I've got that on tape.
Yeah.
We'll make something out of this.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully all goes well, and there'll be this sigh of relief at the end of the video as they step onto the ice and cut, and like, that's the it. That's the
end. Gorgeous. I love that.
So that's the video that I imagined taking, because I think once they're on the ice, it's like out of our hands.
Mm-hmm.
It's about what the judges say,
yeah.
And then it becomes about, well, what did the judges give you? But until they get on the ice, it's really about, what do you think? I really, 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 really wished that there are videos like that of Alyssa Liu,
mm-hmm.
that, because mm-hmm. then the conversation won't really be about her jumps.
Oh,
yes.
Like, I have such a bone to pick with that video that US Figure Skating posted. It was like the third video of her doing a quad lutz or something.
Uh-huh.
And it's like slow motion, slow motion, slow motion to the music. Oh, cool. He did like a he like made the video go fast motion when the music dropped. But it's like right as she landing her quad lutz, and the first comment is like, you purposely sped it up.
Oh, and I'm like, God.
And I'm like, who cares? Like I said, the judges called her out of your control. You're not a judge. You can be upset about it, but like,
you would have a terrible time on Reddit.
And like, well, Twitter, to be honest, because there's a lot of backseat judging and like, my God. But no, I like hearing you talk about that. I'm just thinking, like, that's what we need. Like, as fans, that's what I want to see. I'm not a sports nut, but it is my understanding that other sports, like, you get things like that. Like, the NFL, sometimes you get to see the team warming up or something. Like,
yeah.
It is my understanding that in other sports, you get to know that the athletes are people who, like, live lives outside of just, like, the however many minutes they're on their respective playing field.
It's you said it. Shot. Wait, did you say perspective or respective?
I said respective, damn. But if you already took the shot, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think the kind of mentality that, like, focuses on her jumps and tries to make it a conflict,
mm-hmm.
it's the kind of mentality that harms people,
yes.
skaters, everyone, friendships. Well, but, like, we can all unite around a 14-year-old girl who's trying to make history.
Yeah.
Whether or not she does it,
mm-hmm.
whether or not you agree that she did it,
yeah,
she's tried.
There's gonna be controversy. Like, she could do anything, and there's still gonna be people who are gonna, like, post a close-up of the takeoff edge on, like, Twitter and be like, oh, yeah. Actually, it was, like, 5 degrees to the left. which yeah. infuriates me. I think, like, that was a part of, like, what we talked about, like, going into the podcast, like, almost a year ago, was... we want to not be those people, because the human story behind it is always like 12 times more exciting.
I mean, because every single athlete has such a compelling narrative when you like really zoom out and look at their career. And every event takes on like a different tone if you look at it, not just as like this person trying out to go out and skate clean, but like what has their journey been like and what are they up against? And like, that's for me, like why I enjoy watching it. And so the more into this podcast we've gotten, like the more we have been those people who download the protocols and look at which judge, you know, took off how much GOE, but like, because it's seductive. Like you want to really like get in there and be mad about something. But I think but what keeps us around is the stories, right? And like, what we keep coming back to is like people forget that skaters are people, and that's like insane. Like whether it's like they forget that they're people with feelings who you can't bully online, or they forget that they're people who are fallible. And if you say that, you know, I'm sorry, but like if you say Yuzuru Hanyu is not a perfect god from heaven on Twitter, you will get 100,000 people that will come and be like, I'll kill you at your own home. Like, it's insane. It's wild. Like, these are human being people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want the relatable stuff.
Yeah.
Like, did they choose to not eat breakfast today? Like,
right.
Because that's what I might do if I'm really nervous about something.
Oh, for sure. I skip breakfast when I'm nervous all the time.
I guess to bring it back to like accessibility and figure skating. Like, where do you see your work and like digital content in general in terms of like bringing people to the sport as spectators?
What's my goal? It's to get people to see skating live, because skating on TV is infrequent and or boring, but seeing skating in real life, even if you're sitting on the side of the ice, is actually better than my videos. I think I'm closer, but being there live and like being able to reach your arms out and wave at the skaters and see them waving back at you and hearing the music that's not coming through your iPhone speakers, but actually all around you, and feeling the takeoff edge of the ice, and like feeling the shake when they land. Another thing you don't get to see on TV is you don't get to see like what it feels like in the arena before they skate while the scores are being tabulated, because at home on TV it's just a replay of their skate. But like when you're there live, it's like this time to kind of chat and talk and be social about it with the person sitting next to you who like had the exact same experience as you did.
That's awesome.
Like you can agree. I think when you have a whole bunch of people in an arena sitting and watching it together, like everyone's just a lot more agreeable.
That's true. Everybody agreed. Like everyone went because they wanted to be there and they wanted to watch skating.
Yeah. You didn't go there to rip the skaters apart.
Hopefully.
Yeah, geez. Hopefully. What else do we want to ask?
So many things. I feel like we're going to have a sequel episode. Jordan, if you're ever down for that.
No, we'll bring you back.
That's
one
fine
day.
With me. Like, you can edit out much of what I just said.
So what is something you're like looking forward to or like excited to get to do in the next couple months?
The next couple months.
Or like whenever.
Well, yeah, like I never really know. Honestly, I'm excited to do Dancing on Ice again. And I think the biggest reason is that when I'm working for Dancing on Ice, it's 5 days a week. I make it 12 hours a day. But a lot of it is time where I can just grab my laptop and start editing the many, many terabytes of raw footage that I have. Like basically for 3 months, it's just going to be one big latergram. Just January through March 10th. You're just going to see, like, a lot of stuff on Ice Perspectives, I hope.
Gorgeous.
it's
amazing.
What is a question that you wish you were getting asked? What is something that people never ask when they ask about your work?
Why did you really start on Ice Perspectives?
What is the answer to that? Why did
Why did you really start on Ice Perspectives?
I am just one big nerd, and I just wanted to buy nice cameras. And I was like, I just wanted to buy like a nice full frame camera with a nice 16-35 ultra wide lens. And now I literally toss it around an ice rink like it's a toy. It's great.
You wanted to buy something nice and then be really reckless with it.
Yeah, exactly. Just, you know, yeah,
that's the dream. Perfect.
Something that cost more than any Apple product I ever dreamed of owning. And use it as a tool, which it was supposed to be used as, and feel like an actual professional instead of the kid who kept plastic wrap on everything.
Do we want to like segue into fun questions?
Yes.
Not that this wasn't like super fun, but we, I think we have like a question we like to ask our guests, which is like, if you were going to have like a senior high level, like Grand Prix season or go to the Olympics, what would your dream season be like? Your short program, your long program, music, costumes.
You get to dream design all of it. You can tell us who choreographs it for you.
Oh yeah, who choreographs
you
for you.
You can tell us if you're doing it, who's filming it for you, because you can't film yourself. Just anything. Like, you have endless budget, you have endless skill.
Oh, Jesus.
You have, like, everything. You have access to every single song in the universe. What do you do?
Okay, if I had, like, unlimited funds and limited time, I would want to skate to Muse.
Cool.
With my wife, Talia, who, aww, by the way, was also an ice dancer. She stated for England, and we would represent England, I think, the UK, at the Olympics.
So you'd get all the nice placements, then.
Yeah, exactly. And can your costumes light up? I don't know.
I mean, they're doing costume changes now, so I guess it's allowed.
Yeah, one of the Russian girls had, like, a full, like, mid-skate different dress situation, so you can do whatever you want, I guess.
Yeah, in this dream world, I mean, you can have a light-up costume.
Well, they'll be, like, fluorescent. So maybe they glow in the dark, and just right before we skate, like, we shine some really bright lights at it so that they glow, but they're not actually electronic.
That is incredible. Do you know who you would want to, like, work with you on that? Like, choreograph and everything?
I mean, a few names come to mind, but also some of the best choreographers that I can think of are the ones that I would, like, die. physically die, because, like, Christopher Dean's choreography is obviously, like, amazing. But I would probably suffer 3 concussions in the process. All I can say is, actually, I would want a choreographer who has never been used before for skating.
Love that.
Yes.
Because I think I could convert anything that they did to the skating routine.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably need another coach's help with like putting it into the rules. But yeah, like I would want a choreographer that hasn't been seen in the skating world before.
So,
and then kind of that would be part of the buzz, would be like, oh my god, have you seen this new choreography?
Yes,
that's incredible. So Muse, light of costumes, and a brand new choreographer. I love that.
Basically
answer.
Like people love to talk about new things that are being done in skating, and it yes. would just be so new and different that it would be all hype, basically. Like it wouldn't even matter if we get scored well or we do well. I would just want everyone talking about it.
It would go viral and bring new people to the sport, so it would serve the agenda.
Precisely.
Love that.
Well, thank you so much, Jordan. This has been so unbelievably cool. I think we're like, as two skate nerds, we're just like over the moon to get to chat about it with you.
Riveted.
No, thank you. I'm so glad I like stumbled upon you guys and like started listening. I really enjoy listening to your show.
Oh my god, thank you.
I think
so much.
More people should, and yeah, I hope more people listen to it from now on.
Thank you so much. So if thank someone you. Happens to be listening to this and doesn't know where to find you on the internet, which sounds insane, but
I was gonna say no one listens to us who doesn't know who yeah, you are, but
but just in case, do you want to tell everyone where you are on the internet, like what your handles are and where to find you and follow you and support you? Tell us about your Patreon.
Oh, sure. Well, the tip of the spear is Instagram, for however long that it's popular. It's On Ice Perspectives, and it's also the same thing on YouTube, which is where I was posting like some of the longer form stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I've actually switched to posting longer videos on Patreon for a number of reasons. One thing, YouTube is free, but it also means that anything with copyright music, it's actually the same for Instagram, anything with copyright music gets either a takedown or demonetization.
Yeah.
And it's too stressful not, you know, putting all this work into a video and not knowing if it's going to be pulled or not. So mm-hmm. the nice thing about Patreon is that it's pretty much private. It's like a private little community.
Yeah.
I can post anything I want to it. I can post a 30-minute video and not care if only 100 people watch it, because those 100 people are the people who really care. And that is why I have a Patreon. It's a way to get the people who care about my work to help me continue making it. Mm-hmm. The URL is patreon.com. It's patreon.com/onice perspectives, and for as little as $5 a month you can gain access to some behind the scenes content and a lot of upcoming videos, like that video of Jeremy and Kurt doing that choreography in Toronto.
Fantastic. I can vouch for Jordan's Patreon. It is full of riveting stuff, and I love getting my emails that tell me there's something new to watch.
You can watch On Ice Perspectives videos without having to actually be on Instagram, which is a godsend.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Megan, where are you on the internet? Where can people find you?
If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Megan Kelleher 3. That's MEGHANKELLEHER3. That's also my Instagram handle. I'm not actually that active on Instagram. I post a picture of my cat like once a month, but Twitter is more exciting, I think, for me personally. What about you, Netta? Where are you on the internet?
Where am I on the internet? I'm at Netta Marie, that's NEDA, and then Marie like the Aristocat on Twitter and Instagram. You can also follow my skating journey, which is filmed on an iPhone, put somewhere on the boards. That's at @N_ice_skating. Because get it, nice skating, but also Netta ice skating on Insta. And if you want to follow the podcast, we are at IcedPod on Twitter, where we do a lot of live tweeting of like the Junior Grand Prix and stuff. And also at IcedPod on Instagram, icedpodcast.com. And we are launching our Patreon super, super soon, officially, for people with bonus content coming up. So stay tuned for that update, because it's coming. Yes.
It's coming.
That sounded super threatening, but I promise we're nice.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Jordan, again. And thank you, everybody, for listening. As always, we hope you had fun. We had a great time. And we will see you next time.
Thank you so much, Megan and Netta. I look forward to talking to you soon.
Oh my god, yay. Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Bye.